Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh is daf Ayin Hey, and we did pretty well on Erev Shabbat. We got up to about four lines up from the middle of the daf. So, Rabosa, you will recall that we went through the three separate psukim we have by Truma that are Nogea, the Dinim of Tuma, the two separate psukim we have when it comes to Kachim. And we ended up learning that there are three different Ramazim about the levels of actual Taira, one of which has to do with the washing one's flesh in water, Rachatz B'Saroba Mayim, that's a reference to Tefillah, and one has to do with Uba Shemesh V'Taher, and one which is sufficient for Truma, not for Kachim, and just putting yourself at the water is sufficient for Meiser, not for Truma. And then there's the third Darga, which is B'chol Kodesh Lotiga, which was the reference to the din of the Yoledes. And over there it says that V'chiper Aleha Kohen V'tahira. Now the question is that there's a fourth Pasuk that we never dealt with. And the fourth Pasuk is actually not talking about a person, it's talking about a kli, but nonetheless, it's confusing because, I mean, it ought to be the same halachas of a tefillah. So we're interested today to figure out what the point is of that additional pasuk. So therefore, asks the Gemara today, b'mayim yuva v'tamei ad ha'arev. Now, this is yet a fourth pasuk, that the kli shall be brought into water, and then it will be tamei until the nighttime, which means that there's a din of Harif Shemesh. So there it's talking about v'chola. This is a pasuk we've dealt with many times in all kinds of areas. V'chola sher yipol alav mehem b'motam yitma mikol kli eitz or beged or or osak kol kli asher yaseh malocha behem. So this is the din of kelim. So it says over there beferish that the halacha is that it should be yuva b'mayim yuva. And then there's still a din of v'tamei ad ha'arev, which is the halacha of the din of Harif Shemesh. So we know all of that already, right? So Lomali, Omer Rabbi Zera, we don't know already, because this is talking about Lenegia. The psukim that we were talking about the din of the Oledes, what does it say over there? V'achar yochal min ha-kodashim. So either we're talking about the tome of the Zera b'nei Aharon, after he does this, then he can eat min ha-kodashim, as this pasuk is talking about kelim. Kelim obviously can't eat, so then this is only a reference to negi'ah. And of course, it would be the same. Whatever the halach is of touching would be true about a human as well. So it's telling me if a kli is not allowed to be used for truma before Harif Shemesh, so then it would be telling me that a human who is a tful yum is not allowed to touch truma, which we didn't know until now. We were talking about eating truma. That's the Kiddush, the Tanya. And, says Rabbi Zera, you can see this gufa from the beautiful Diak in the Braita. The Braita says like this. If you take a look at this pasuk, it's really very confusing. Because, you see, in the other pasuk that we have, we talk about v'chiper alav ha-kohen v'tahera, or yitar, and so on. But over here, it repeats the same word, and it says tamei, and then it says taher. So it says kli asher yaseh malacha behem b'mayim yuva v'tamei ad ha'arev v'taher. Now it doesn't say v'yitaher. At that point, it will become tahor or v'tiheru and so on, like it says elsewhere. So therefore, we're taking these two words as being a statement of what it is from beginning to end, tamei, tahor. And therefore the Braisa says, if that's the case, then it's a contradiction, right? On the one hand, it says v'tamei. You might think that means for all and every purpose, yochol lakol, Talmud lomar, but can't mean lakol, because after all, it does say v'taher. Oh, so then it's tahor. So v'taher yochol lakol, no, Talmud lomar v'tamei. So how do we understand that? It must be to tell me, ha-ketzad, kan lema'aser, kan letruma. So that ein hachinami, when it came to the din of ma'aser, it was tahor the whole time. Why? Because there's no din of tful yom by ma'aser. This we already saw, really, in terms of achila of tful yom. And it's telling us that the same thing is true of negiyah. And when it comes to Truma, we know that the Tfuya Mezosar Bachila, and here it's coming to tell us that the same thing is true about Negiya. Tfuyom cannot eat Truma, Tfuyom cannot be Nogea, but Truma. How do you know that it's this way? Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe we should say that for Truma, it's Mutter, and for Maaser Sheni, it's Aser. So that it could be the exact opposite of what we were saying. No? Well, does that really make sense? I mean, until now, we proved that when it came to Achila, we saw that Truma was more Chomer than Maaser. So isn't it mistabra that kiecha de chamira achila de truma me achila de maaser, hochinami chamira negiya de truma me negiya de maaser? I mean, it makes sense that the entire thing should be consistent. There's no din of, when it comes to maaser sheni, of haref shemesh, whether it's negiya achila or touching or negiya, and there is a din when it comes to truma of requiring haref shemesh, whether it's negiya or achila. Makes sense. Or vibaisema, I can say to you that actually the din of negiya, that it has to be referring to truma, I know that really from the story of the diak in the pasuk by the case of the yoledet. Because over there it says that the yoledet, b'chol kodesh, lo tigav, l'migdash, lo tavo. So over there it says, do not touch any kodesh. Now what is that actually referring to? Says the Braita, actually what that's talking about is someone who is eating truma. What do you mean someone is eating? It says lotiga. Maybe it means what it says. It's possible. So maybe it's Gufa saying that b'chol kodesh lotiga, it's an iser that while she is a tulas yom, even though she's a tulas yom aroch, 40 days, 80 days, I shouldn't really say, I mean, she's not really a tefula until after the first 14 days or the first 7 days, but she's a tefula Yom Arok, 33 days or 66 days. And it's saying, do not touch any truma until the Kohen comes, brings her carbon, and then she'll be completely tahor, right? No, definitely not. Because if you read the whole pasuk together, what you see is that the Torah is specifically making a comparison between the so-called touching. B'chol kodesh lo tiga, be'al hamigdash lo tavo. That means that we're saying that these two things are meant to be understood in the same context. So makish kodesh l'migdash. Okay, when you're talking about the migdash, someone who would come in a state of tuma, into the Beit HaMikdash, the dinner over there is that there's a chiyuv of koris. And therefore, mamigdash is referring to a dover sheyesh bo nitilat neshama. It's something that involves the destruction of your soul. So, av kodesh, dover sheyesh bo nitilat neshama. It's got to be referring to something that will be nogea, at least the chiyuv misa bidei shamayim, which is the destruction of your life, says of the life in terms of the neshama. Benegia. Benegia, there is never a chiyuv, not of kares, and not of misa. Therefore, sorry. Therefore, must be referring to actually eating. So then why doesn't it say so? Why does it talk about negiya? To tell me, hi da afke b'lashon negiya, hachikama, to tell me that there is an iser of negiya, and that the same iser, it's not tzebchiyah, but the same state that would create an iser for achila, that state, namely tfuyom, also creates a state of iser for just touching. So that concludes the usage of the various psukim that we have, both for Gabi Negiya and the Gabi Achila, both for the dinam of Truma and for the dinam of Maaser Sheni. As we saw earlier, its relationship to the Paraduma and to the dinam of the Bikurim, all is behind us. Now we move to the next part of the Mishnah. The next part of the Mishnah talks about something entirely differently. A Ptsuadaka, Vukrot Shafcha. So what does it say over there? In the case where we have a Kohen who is absorbed. I'm so sorry. So embarrassing. Who is a Ptsuadaka or a Krochavcha, then the halacha is that they are ma'achil, as opposed to the, we talked about the Orel. The Orel has no problem with being ma'achil, his wife, and so on. But someone who is a Ptsuadaka does have a problem. And he cannot give his wife truma, even though he can give his avadim truma. Why is that? Because his wife becomes his zona. Remember, we spoke about Rashi mentions a halala, but the reality she becomes a zona if he sleeps with her. So because of that, the very fact that they're married should seem to pass on his wife for eating truma. However, continues on the Mishnah, that in the event that he never slept with her, imlo yida'a, if he never had intimate relations with her, then after the point at which he had this accident that made him a Ptsuadaka, so then they could continue to eat. Now, this is fascinating because before, remember, we were talking about a case where the very fact that we were talking about a case over there the, earlier, we were talking about a case of a Amona L'Kohen Gadol, or we had a Grusha L'Kohen Hedyot, where over there we said that his wife cannot eat truma. Now, if you recall, we had a machlokas over there. There, Rabbi Meir said, the reason that she can't eat truma is because she's mishtameret libiya psula. So even if they were never, they never got to the chuppah and they never had any intimate relations, she would still be a mishtameret libiya psula. So she is set aside for something that is going to make her permanently psula from achila. And at that point, the Mishnah said, and therefore she already cannot eat. Mashenkin over here, the Mishnah is saying, despite the fact that the moment that he does have relations with her, he will actually passel her because of Ptsuadaka Zoshalavo Bekal. For anyone. So if his wife is now supposed to be eating truma through him, and at this point he does sleep with her, so then he is going to passel her, right? Because she's sleeping with an Isser of Bia Bekal, an Isser Lav. But here it says, until such things actually happen, she's kosher. So man tana mishtameret libiya psula d'oraita achla. So who is the one who says that? The fact that she is set aside and she's in for a libiya psula. Here it says that she could still continue to eat truma. So Rabbi Elazar points out, well, obviously, this brings us back to the machloket that we had before between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon on one side and Rabbi Meir on the other side, where Rabbi Meir said that a mishtamer to be a psula is actually immediately psula even before they even had relations. Over here, it's obviously, says Rabbi Elazar, it's obviously Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Where over there, they argued and they said that an amon l'kain gadol, or Grusha to Kohen Hedyot is allowed to eat truma as long as they never slept together. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, no, you don't even have to say that. You know what? Over here it could work out. Even Alibi the Rabbi Meir, and even though Rabbi Meir said in the case of the Grusha, the case of the Amona, that she cannot eat truma as long as she is set up for a Bia Psula, despite the fact that she never got there, here he would be made. You know why? Because she already has been eating truma before she became asura. So she continues to eat truma until she actually does become asura. Whereas Rabbi Elazar says, no, what do you mean? How can it work out according to Rabbi Meir? This svara, we had all this discussion earlier. This svara of shekvar achlava, just because a woman started eating truma, so because of that she should be allowed to continue eating truma? There's no such thing. If you don't understand that that's ridiculous, so then, how do you explain the fact that if you have a non-kohenet that goes ahead and gets married to a kohen, that the din is that if her husband dies, that she has stopped eating truma? Unless, of course, she has a child and son, but that we had the whole discussion. But that means that the fact that she wants a truma doesn't allow her to continue eating truma? So that's a Dover Pashut in the Torah. So how can you come and say that in this case, even though normally Mishtamer to be Absula would be Usur, but in this case, having once eaten Truma, she continues to eat Truma. Where does that come from? What, is it a din of inertia in eating Truma? Where do we see that? Whereas Reb Yochanan would say to you, what kind of connection is there? The case where we were talking about, if her husband, when her husband dies, how is she supposed to continue eating truma? I don't understand. She was only eating truma by virtue of the fact that her husband has this kinyan, and kinyan kaspo is ochelis b'truma. If there is no husband and there is no kinyan kaspo, then why in the world would it be mutter for her to continue eating truma? That's because hatam poka kinyana. That's because his kinyan is no longer there if he's dead. So where's the kinyan kaspo of the kohen? Mashenkin over here, what's the problem? That we're waiting for her to be... to be what? She'll be psula? When she's psula, she'll be psula. So what do you, in a case where the only reason that she would be eating is by virtue of her relationship to this person, and that relationship is never going to happen because she's a surah to him, and therefore we view it as essentially, so she's already psula. That's the point. But if she's eating, why should she become psula? Because of the fact that one day she might become a surah. What does that have to do with the present situation? I don't see any connection to these two things. Okay, so now we go on. So we talked about in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Ezeo pitsu'a daka. So what defines a pitsu'a daka? That is, anyone who has any of these issues, either in both testicles or even one testicle. That's how the Pasuk speaks about it. Now, and there's something extremely disturbing about the way that this entire sugya is expressed in the Torah, because Lamaisa, the Gemara is going to darshan the word pitsua as referring to one element. Pitsua means damage, right? Having been hit. Daka, according to the Gemara, means to be dach. What do you mean? Dach bimeducha means to be crushed. Kirut refers to being cut. So basically, we're going to be talking about three different types of damage to reproductive organs. And so one of them is a damage by impact, tsua. The other is damage by crushing, and the other is damage by cutting. But the Gemara keeps talking about it in two directions. Because to read it this way, you would have tsua, daka, or krut in the shafcha, in the pouring place, which would be the penis, bedavka, no reference over here to testicles. But the Gemara keeps talking about pitsua daka as if that's one thing, as if the word daka means testicles. And that's the way many people understand pitsua daka. But as the Malbim points out, show me one place where testicles are called daka. Whoever heard of such a thing? Doesn't make any sense bichlal. Especially you see from the Gemara that it's either pitsua or dacha or krut. So how do you learn these two different things? So, I mean, the problem over here, the diak in the Gemara, time is the Malbim, and the Lechorin, there's no way out of it, is that since we don't find a list of things that would say pitsua kama or pitsua vidaka vicharut, so the Gemara is being medayik from the fact that we call pitsua daka on the one hand uchrut shavcha, which makes no sense. It would say pitsua udaka Ucharut Shofcha. That therefore we're being medayik that we will also treat it as a remez to two separate sugyas. Ptsua daka must be one thing in some other organ, which we then understand to be connected to reproduction, because if it's connected to Shofcha, we'll see. The Gemara is going to ask, what makes you think this has anything to do with reproductive organs anyway? What does it say in the pasuk? Anything about reproductions? It just says ptsua daka v'krut shavcha. So obviously it's not that the word daka is a reference to testicles, nor is shavcha a normal way to refer to a penis either, but we're going to see, bedavkas, the Gemara is going to be medayik, what the point over here is. But right now we're understanding bapashtas. We have a din of ptsua, we have a din of daka, and we have a din of karut. Therefore, comes along the brisa, and explains, let's take a look at what we so-called, and I'm putting this into quotation, so-called pitsua daka in the sense of having wounded testicles. But remember, that's not really what it means. We're pretending that that's what it means, right? So what does that mean? It means, kol sheniftzu beitzim shelo. So anyone that had some type of impact wound that leaves a wound on either the testicles or even one of them. Afilo achat mihem. Or afilo nikvu. Even if there was just a puncture. Now we'll see that this puncture means puncture all the way through the testicle, from one side to the other. Because otherwise, there wouldn't be a need for chasrul later on, which this is. So we find the same thing in the dinim of treifas, legabe a lung, right? So you could have a nekev, or you could have a chaser. The chaser would be even if it doesn't puncture all the way through. The nekev is dafka if it does puncture all the way through. Here for a testicle, there's no way that we refer to inside and outside, so therefore it's going all the way through. So in nikvu, again, even one, or nimoku. So nimoku would mean that because of some injury, so there was a runation, maybe gangrene, but some actual, they actually were damaged to the point that they shrunk. Or afilu chasru, even if a piece of a testicle is missing. In all of these cases, now we say the Gemara is going to take for granted that we're talking about only the type of thing that affects reproduction. But dafka, if it doesn't affect reproduction, it's not included, as we'll see throughout the sugya, that that's a davar pasha to the Gemara, that we're talking about things that are going to also cause sterility. Omer Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, I have to tell you that I have a Kabbalah from the Chachomim in Barnea's neighborhood in Kerem B'Yavne, that kol she'enu ela beitza achat, if someone only has one testicle, enu ela siris chama, such a person is only referred to as a siris chama. A siris chama means, what a siris chama in halachic terms means, is someone who has been affected in this way, not through any type of intervention, physical intervention that is caused by an event that has to do with human activities. So there's two ways of understanding it. Either it means sris chama, that the damage came through overheating testicles, which is a very easy way to destroy fertility, or it means Suriz Chama, someone who the moment that he saw the sun, and then it would be a reference not to heat, but would be a reference to the sun, so from the moment that he was born, and it's a way of referring to a congenital defect, which is the way that most take for granted that Suriz Chama means he's born that way, but it isn't really true, because Suriz Chama would include events that came about through things that happened afterwards, not through human intervention, which means, and this is the way, there's yet another way of understanding Sris Chama, that Sris Chama means that it's a fever. We use the word Chama as a fever. So Sris Chama would be that an illness, so he had mumps, let's say, right? And the mumps left him sterile. And or had actually a visible impact on his testicles, wouldn't matter. He would still, in this case, that this is the strange thing that Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is saying, that if he only has one testicle, he's called a siris chama, which is ridiculous. What is having one testicle have to do with siris chama? I mean, we could have one testicle for any number. Oh, please, will you go away? I don't want you. Goodbye.
No problem. I won't.
It's a chutzpah. Something's got to be done with this, especially with saris that turn out to be men. I mean, that's outrageous. Anyway, something's got to be done about these things. All right, I'll have to figure out how to turn this off. Anyway, so this is ridiculous. How could he be only a Sris Chama and he's kosher? Which the Gemara will ask in a moment. What is this supposed to mean by a Sris Chama? By the way, one of the fascinating cases of Sris Chama also is found in lungs, the way that Rashi brings it. And that is an anaphylactic reaction, where over there it talks about lungs shriveling through some type of event that terrifies the animal, and there's this reaction in which the lungs actually will shrivel, and they're no longer functional, Rashi brings this benogea to shrivel testicles. Maybe this person was caught in a burst of lightning or thunder and so on, was terrified, and this affected him. Again, you know, I don't know like the medical realities today. And the fact is, Reb Moshe in a tshuva points out that this is not going to be any different than any of the other things that medically change. In other words, we have a completely different medical take on something. And he relied halacha lemaisa on this in allowing biopsies of testicles and things like this, which according to the Gemara seems to be usher. And we say, well, what's the problem? Biopsies never affected fertility and so on and so forth. So if people know what they're doing, then obviously this wouldn't have any kind of translation halacha. So we have to keep that in mind. In general, there's a very serious problem b'chalal in the entire way that the Gemara deals with the male reproductive system, in that the very similar to the problems that we have with the female reproductive system. It's very difficult for us to figure out what in the world is the references that we had in Maseches Nida. And finally, I mean, people worked out what is the reference. Here, nobody's worked out what it's talking about, because the Gemara keeps talking as if there are two separate tubes, one that carries semen and one that carries urine, which of course is ridiculous. And I mean, the reproductive system today, I mean, yes, of course, all the way down at the level of immediately post bladder, there is, of course, the connection of semen going through after the prostate. And then, but the actual urethra, of course, is all one thing. So what exactly, how this would relate to cuts in the penis and so on in terms of, you know, barzmanenu, the medicine doesn't really seem to add up. But anyway, so the Gemara asks, how could there be only one, having one testicle be a sris chama? What is it supposed to mean? The sris chama, if we're talking about over here, now there's two ways of understanding this. Many of the Rishonim and many of the Acharonim believe that Sris Chama is only where we cannot actually see on a gross level the problem. And therefore, it can't be referring to sterility that it can be seen by the fact that one of the testicles is missing, because to say the least, that is very evident. And that, according to them, is the kasha. You know, so how could we call it a sris chama? And the Rashi says that the problem in the Gemara is simply the fact that it's usually due to an illness and lacking one testicle. Why would he make a blanket statement that lacking one testicle is an illness by definition? I mean, how does that make sense? No, what he meant to say is that for all intents and purposes, he might as well be the same as a Sris Chama. All he's saying is that no matter what the situation was, it's not included in the three issues that the Torah mentioned, namely Pitzia, Dika, or Krita, because those are all things that are done to an organ, but not that the organ is missing. That's the point. So Tosis points out that we have the same thing when it comes to Ilchus Treifus as well. So you can have a situation, and this again is, this is in terms of modern medicine as well. If you have a ruptured spleen, you're in big trouble. But the solution to a ruptured spleen is to take out the spleen. If there's no spleen, there's no problem. And many such issues you can have in Ilchus Treifus. And therefore, this does the same thing over here. There may be things that can affect reproduction if there's a problem with the testicle that are no longer going to be problematic if the testicle is removed. So that's not a big kasha. Okay. So all that Rabbi Yishmael meant to say was that he has the same din as if he would be a Sris Chama, and therefore he would be kosher. Now, the problem over here is that you said that a puncture wound, that's what you said, Nikev alone, is considered to be enough to make one a Pitsua Daka, which means, as we mentioned in our introduction, that we're talking about the assumption that it affects the reproduction, because otherwise we said that there would be no Isser. And this is an example of where the Gemara takes that for granted and why we paskin that way. Because the Gemara says now, you said that is Nikev is considered to be a Pitsua Daka, but is it true that Nikev lo molid? That just because there's a puncture in a testicle, so there can't be fertility. Who gave the solical dikla? Was this guy who climbed a palm tree? V'charze silva bebeits him, and he got a thorn right through his testicles. Those are really big thorns. Yikes! V'nafak minei kechut demugla, and you could see that there was actually leakage that was there, which certainly seemed to be semen that was like pus that was coming out of him. And, not so much time later, he still had children. So why are we assuming that this is a catastrophic damage? Well, Shalach Shmuel Akami to Rav. Shmuel asked this, like, Rav, like, what's the din over here? And Rav said to him, well, you better find out where those kids come from, because they sure as heck don't come from him. So find out who his mother has been fooling around with, because it ain't his father. Okay, so therefore, apparently, indeed, we're saying that Nikev, which again, this is as Rav Moshe says, we know for a fact that this isn't true. We do puncture wounds to testicles all the time in fertility treatments and so on, taking out sperm when it's necessary, directly where we can't get any viable sperm any other way or whatever. There shouldn't be a problem. Nonetheless, again, if we're talking about a gross act of puncturing from a thorn in a tree, so that is different, okay? Om Rav Yehuda, Om Rav Shmuel. Pitsua daka bidei shamayim kasher. So as we said before, that if there was an event that was called min hashamayim, and min hashamayim would be, so Rashi brings over here the case of a terrifying event that causes his testicles to shrivel. So he brings Gufa, somebody was caught in a thunder and right next to him and whatever. So that seems to be a contradiction with what Rashi says before. Because here Rashi only mentions either a congenital one testicle or some kind of thing like an event, but doesn't talk about the pitzia, which he mentioned earlier, where the question would be illness, right? But the truth is that there's a very simple solution to that. Because when we're talking about a pitzia, we're talking about a discernible, if we don't learn like those who say that the meaning of a Sris Chama is that it's not discernible, then Rashi would be making two different types of a Sris Bidei Shamayim. A pitsua, by definition, the word niftsa means niftsa, like we said before. And that would mean that it is discernible. Okay, it's discernible if someone is congenitally missing or one of his testicles is busted or whatever. That could be congenital. But it could also be an event. What kind of event? So we're saying not a fever event, but an event that would be this similar. So what would that be? Maybe some type of anaphylaxis. Okay. So maybe Rashi's bringing two completely different things. Otherwise, it's very strange that on the same daf, he seems to be saying himself. Because there was said that if he got sick, it's considered to be a Sris Chama as well. Anyway, there's a lot of discussion about this stuff. But I think that that's a very reasonable understanding of Rashi. And that it would be nogea lahalacha, therefore, because, we end up, according to most of the poskim, talking about the inability to actually, on a gross level, to see the impact that's the hallmark of a Sris Chama, which, according to the way we're understanding Rashi, is definitely not the case. Omar Rava, you can see this, that it has to be, if we're talking about a Pitsua Daka. Normally, when we refer to a person of a certain state, we talk about it as we would have said, ha-patsua. But we're not calling him ha-patsua. We're talking about somebody who went through an event that wounded him. So that would goofa be the point that someone who is ha-patsua, So that is the way that he appeared on the world. Or that is what happened after God got finished with him and so on. So it would be Hapatsua. But over here, a reference to Tsuadaka is a reference to a specific cause that happened in the course of life, meaning in dealing with things like climbing palm trees and things like that. That's the pshat, Tsuadaka, not Hapatsua. Hapatsua seems to mean, you know, well, this is a guy, this is the way he is, whether it's congenital or whether this is what happened to him, but not that he was involved in making happen. Okay, another brisa said, that's Nisatana. On the one hand, it says, lo yavo pitzua daka. And then the next pasuk has, lo yavo mamzer, right? That's where we learn from, not from Rava's diuk of pitzua versus apatzua, but rather from the very fact that there's a smichus of pitzua daka to mamzer. So just like the whole point of a mamzer is that he is born through human illicit intervention. That's the point of a mamzer. So someone had to do something and do something that was wrong in order to create this mamzer. So then that means that when we're talking about a tzu'adaka, we're referring to the same thing. Just like we're not allowed to do anything that affects reproductive organs in men. So because of that, the Pitzua Dakar is a reference to the same kind of thing, that a human did it. And therefore, that's the only time that the Torah is answering it and not just when it happens. Omar Rava, therefore, this as we saw that there's no other way to understand the way that Chazal see the Pasuk is that we are pretending to read things in two directions. On the one hand, we read the word Pitzua Dakar as if it's a reference to damage to a testicle. And on the other hand, we read Pitsua, kama, daka, kama, kurot, kama. I shouldn't say there's no kama after the kurot, but not as a separate thing. And that, as I mentioned, those of you who weren't here, I mentioned that that's the diak that the Malba makes in the Pusik, just in terms of how to read the Pusik, kipshute. And because of that, the Pitsua is a reference to any and all of parts of reproductive organs, which means I don't care whether there is some type of pitzia, some type of damage, a wound of some kind to the penis. I don't care whether it's to the testicles. I don't care whether it's chutei beitzim. I don't care whether we hear the Gemara calls the chutei beitzim, basically, that entire testicular cord, which anything that is included there, which is, of course, vas, blood supply, and so on and so forth. It's like a very complex interrelationship and very, you have to be very careful in dealing with it. I don't care where this damage was. So wherever it is, it would be exactly the same in terms of the dinim of Pitzua Daka if it affects fertility. The same thing is true about crushed. Dach bekulam. I say dach, it means if something is crushed, that means if you crush the vest, then this person becomes pasul. Bein shenidach hagid, bein shenitku beitzim, bein shenitku chutei beitzim, wherever this crushing was done, everything would be puzzle. Same thing would be krut, cutting. So if cutting the penis, bad. Cutting a testicle, bad. Cutting the chutei beitzim, any of the testicular cord, bad. That's the point. Can you explain to me, how do we know that this has anything to do with reproduction? Where does it mention a reproductive organ here? How do we know it doesn't mean somebody who's got, I don't know, who's got a wound in his head, you know? So mimaida ha'ibitzua daka has got to be referring to genitals. A guy who's got a terrible wound in his head is not allowed to be babakal. I mean, it's just as normal to say such a thing. Omar Leisa, Rava said, well, so how come it doesn't say? Tell me, why do you think it doesn't say, Adora Siri Loya Vobekahal, like it says in the other cases where we have a Isser of the Vobekahal? Must be because there ain't going to be no Dora Siri. That's the point. So it's telling me, therefore, that it's something that caused infertility by damaging genitals. What else could it mean? So he said to him, what do you mean? Maybe because it has nothing to do with future generations. That's why it says it. Being as we're talking about somebody who has a wound to his head, why would it answer his children? Maybe that's the whole point. The Dilma Haidalo Monobodoros is because he's the one that's got the problem. His child doesn't have a problem. His grandchild doesn't have a problem. So why in the world should the Terra mention the generations? It's not because there aren't generations. It's because they're irrelevant. That's the point. Oh, so says the Gemara, so it must be that we're talking about reproduction because it uses the word krutshavcha. So, I mean, that seems to be very clearly referring to penises that pour, right? So it would be the place where he would urinate, the place where he would ejaculate. So it must be referring to krutshavcha. So then must the whole thing, when we talked about Petsua Daka, even though, again, we're pretending Petsua Daka is a different organ, but if one was an organ that had to do with reproduction, so this must be part of the reproductive system, which would therefore include even the chutei beitzim. But I don't understand, he said. How do you know that even krutshavcha, what a strange way to refer to a penis? The pouring thing? The pouring thing. What are you, a two-year-old? A pouring thing. What's a krutshavcha? Maybe a krutshavcha means a guy has a cleft palate, you know? So he drips from his lips. Why? I understand. That's just as reasonable. So krutshavcha gufe, mi mai deba otoma komei, mi mi sifte. He says he's got a problem with his lips, you know? So he drips. Like, maybe that's what it is. No, because shavcha means makom sheshofech. Shofech, I mean, look, when you spit, I mean, something's going to be coming from your lips. That's a place where normally, what we're going to call lips, the dripping place. I mean, normally lips are not dripping places. So lips can spit, yes, but if they spit, it's ejected. You know, 5 feet away. So that's something that's not called, that's not called shofech. So it can't be referring to lips. Okay, fine. It's his nose. Okay, somebody who has a cut nose cannot get married. I mean, that's the nose is always dripping. I can tell you, I've been going like this for 2 months. So maybe that, maybe that's what it's referring to. Well, notice it doesn't say in the dripper, does it? I mean, if we're talking about in the dripper, you'd be right. The nose is the big dripper. But it doesn't say bishvoch, it says krotshovcha. So that means that because we're talking about some place on the body, that because of the fact that it was cut, so because of that, it spills. But if it wouldn't be cut, it wouldn't be spilling, it would be actually shooting. It would be mikaleach, it would be ejaculation or even urination. So that doesn't include a nose, because whether you cut the nose, you don't cut the nose, it's always dripping anyway. So because of that, it's got to be referring to a penis. What else could it be referring to? In the Braisa, it says, same kind of lima that we had before. Just like it says lo yavo petsua daka, which immediately is followed by lo yavo mamzer. So just like mamzer is a reproductive issue by definition, that's what it's talking about. So saying right next to it has got to be a reproductive issue also. Obviously in a very different way, but it's still a reproductive issue. So misusing reproduction to create mamzerim or having broken reproduction by having a petsua daka. That's what it seems to be referring to, clearly in the pasuk. So from the Braita, we made use of the smichas of the krutshavcha to mamzer twice in terms of referring to the similarity to actually the location. And also, we had before the question of the dorot, not just the location. Now, we said that we looked at the relationship when it came to tzitzim that are ma'akvim es hamila. What was important to us was the atara specifically. So those tzitzim that are ma'akiv with the atara, now it's not clear, it's big machlokasin, about whether the reference to the atara in this sugya is the same reference to the atara that we were talking about tzitzim. Because the point is very different. So what we have over here is two different questions. The shaila of the relationship of the orla to the atara is quite obvious. The whole point of the orla is that it covers the atara. So then the idea of what is defined as the atara legabe tzitzin ha-ma'akven samila is specifically the rim around where you would normally have the tight-fitting membrane and skin that will come up around the atara, which anyway is not necessarily entirely covered at all. We talk about, normally we think of the atara as the crown, not a rim around a crown, right? But rather a corona. So the question over here, when it comes to these dinim that we're talking about over here, may also involve the entirety of the corona, or it may be the question of a rim also. Because what we're identifying here is what is the area that really bothers me when it comes to the problem of the idea of Pitzua, well, I shouldn't say Pitzua Daka the way the Gemara is using it. I should use the word Krosh Shofcha. But remember that in terms, again, of the way we understand the Pashas of the Pasuk, we're just talking about different types of wounds to any of an organ necessary for reproduction. So obviously when we're talking about the Atara, we're talking about a penis. So now the question is, what precisely is the problem? I'm going to see one issue of a problem is the question of whether it's possible to actually stimulate ejaculation when areas of the penis are damaged because you don't have proper contact with the area of the penis that is stimulatable if there is a cut off of a part and so on. But then that would mean that, again, as we saw earlier, the question of the atara doesn't matter to me so much because that is not an area that we can view as part of the shaft of the penis where all the action takes place, so to speak. This is like much, much more of a separate type of thing that's not really important to us in terms of reproduction and so shouldn't matter so much. And because of that, if you can already get a whole penis up to the atara, so then damage beyond that point doesn't matter. So that's basically what we said. Lamata me'atara. So we said lamata me'atara. Remember that lamata always means the opposite of what it does in English. Lamata means towards the ground, that is away from the body. And lamala is towards the body, which is viewed as the top, so to speak, important part, is your body. So therefore, the question over here is, Nikev lamata me'atara, shekenegdo lama'ala me'atara. Now, here is two completely different ways. Sorry. The way Rashi seems to understand it, which is obviously impossible to say that he argues literally on Tosfos. It's just that he takes a broader view of the issue. Suppose there is actually a Nikev, which we said Nikev is true of anything. So that would mean if there is a puncture wound, suppose this puncture wound goes, and this is how Tosis reads it, remember that what you normally have is a much larger piece of atara on one side of the penis, which you would call the upper side, that is to say facing your face if you're looking down at your penis. So you have a larger piece of fleshy material on the tip of the penis facing you than you do underneath, because the shape of the penis really, many people hold it's the basis of that heart shape, is really trying to show an atara, because that's exactly what an atara looks like, is a heart. Hearts don't look anything like hearts, you may notice. So that would explain why it's a reference to love rather than why a heart attack is a reference to love. But you can understand both. But anyway, so the idea over here would be if we take that shape as being a spread out atara, so then what Tosfos says, the point is, if you have a puncture that goes in at the top of the heart, so to speak, bottom of the heart, which is the large piece, as opposed to the place where there's something missing, which is that nice design at the top of the heart, right? So, and it comes out, the puncture comes out between those two tops of the heart. So that would be the simple meaning. You could obviously have a straight through the atara puncture wound, which on top is in the middle of the fleshy atara, but which on the bottom literally goes straight through the shaft of the penis. Rashi adds that it's diagonal. But obviously it would include it if it doesn't need to be diagonal. He's just saying even if it only worked out that way because it was on a diagonal. It wasn't necessarily in the place of the body where it would have come out on a place where there's no atarat. But the idea is the same. Tosis restricts it to the question like this, because since that area would be atarah, if there would be atarah in that kind of place, which there isn't, so then the question is that a puncture through the atarah or not? Or is that a puncture in the shaft of the penis? That's the issue, and view it as going through from one side to the other. Fine? So that's the issue. So, savar, Reb Chiya bar Abba lachshure. So Reb Chiya bar Abba had a case like this, and he wanted to be matir, this individual, to go ahead and to get married. Because we said that it's not called a kroshavcha, that is, if it's not a nekev that goes straight through, that's only true of a chaser, a nekev has to go straight through. And over here we said that we don't view, that's what it said, it has to be dafka mi ha'atara v'lamala. So in one sense, this is mi'atara lamata. On the other side, it's mi'atara lamala. So it's not mefulash as a nekev on both ends, and therefore should not be a problem. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, should be mutter. Omale Reb Asi, I could tell you that Reb Yeshua ben Levi paskin that that's not true, and that atara kol shehi mi'akevet, so that wherever you have something that leaves some of the atara, in other words, it goes through the entire penis, even though it's in an area which is not covered with atara, but since there's not a piece of atara all around, even on just on that one side, and there is on the other side, that is also ma'akev, because here it's closer to your body, and therefore it is considered to be a nekev. Well, I mean, the Mishnah said, and that brings us, of course, to the next piece in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, im nishtayeh me'atara. If there was anything left of the atara, even chut asara, so all you have is a tiny little bit of the glands that was left, then it's kosher. Yatsiv Ravina, so Ravina was asking, v'komi b'ele, when we said, even if there's a tiny little bit that's left, is that a little bit that's left along the entire atara? Or does it mean, I'm so sorry, oh, apnei ruba, or are we talking about most of the atara? Omale rava tosfala ravina, melo hachut apnei ruba. The halacha is, you don't need the entirety of the atara to be a chut that's left, as long as it's very interesting. We have the same lashonis in Hilchas Treifa. There's a lot of the inyanim that are similar to Hilchas Treifa, even the language. So, melo hachut al pnei ruba, but it's only if it's klape reisha. It has to be towards the body. But otherwise, if it's not towards the body, then if there is a damage on the bottom of the atara, even if it would leave some of the atara there, that's not going to help you. Because what we're looking at is to make sure that the damage is limited to the glands itself, right? To that piece of skin, that fleshy skin. Omer Avuna. Okay, so now let us consider what type of cuts we're referring to. Because I would say that if this person has a penis that is cut as if it's a pen, so it has a sharpened top, let's say, right? So then it should be kosher. Because basically, it happened over here, it does not really affect his ability, it doesn't affect the urethra, and it's cutting around the outside of the shaft of the penis. So that should be okay, and he should be kosher. Masha Einkein kimarzev pisula. On the other hand, if what you have is something that looks like a gutter pipe, so that actually some area has been cut out from the top of the penis. And now it looks as if you have a pipe, but again, it hasn't affected the actual ability to urinate or to ejaculate, so that that area is not affected, but the top was cut through. That would be possible. Why is that? Because hai shalit ba'avira, a cut exposes the inside of the semen to air, which allows basically to ultimately cause infections or to make it impossible for there to be normal functioning. In the end, it's going to get down into the prostate. Who knows what it's going to cause? You can't have something that's going to allow for a passage, an open passage in that kind of delicate area. Masha Enkin, in the case of the one who is kukumos, that's not a problem because it hasn't damaged the ability to actually ejaculate, and it also has not allowed the entry of outside air in any way, so it's basically a surface problem. So it's affected the shape of the penis, but who cares? Whereas Rav Chisda says just the opposite. If he's cut like a marzev, then he would be kosher. But if he's sharpened like a kumas, so then he's pasul. I'll tell you why. Because if he's sharpened like a pencil, so to speak, so then he has damaged the ability to stimulate ejaculation. Because, I mean, what does he have to rub against the vaginal surface that's going to bring him to ejaculation? So that's no good. So because of that, hi, Garid. If he's got a cut on top that's like a gutter, it doesn't matter. Because he could still, Garid is to be Gorid, like we would call it. Well, what do you say in English? How do you translate the word Garid? Everybody here, it means to stimulate, right? To rub against or so on is Grida. So it would still stimulate ejaculation, whereas if he is like a quill, yeah, like friction, yeah, right. So this, since there's no friction, how the heck is he supposed to ejaculate? Omar Rava, you know what Ravuna said, makes more sense. That the issue is that you have to make sure that you don't have the entry of air, which is going to change everything, changes temperature, it allows germs, and I don't know, but that's going to cause problems. As far as the idea of what are you going to have friction to cause ejaculation? I mean, for heaven's sakes, you have a barrel. You ever stuck a spigot into a barrel? So how does it starts with a small part, right? And then it gets wider and wider. You push it into the barrel until it finally hits. The same thing is true of a penis. I mean, it's not as if it's gone all the way. We're talking about the top, towards the top of what we call in English, top of the penis. Here it's the bottom. But that idea, so fine, so penetrate more deeply in the end, and something will eventually happen. It may not be as effective, but it's going to be enough to cause ejaculation. Midedavi abarza de chavita. Omar le ravina le maremar. Hachi Omar Marzut Mishmeder of Papa, the halacha is that it really doesn't matter whether it's kakumos or whether it's a marzev. It's definitely kosher. However, there's one problem that isn't clear, and that was that he's not sure. Now, who exactly is it sure doesn't clarify over here. But whether is that referring to Lamata Meatar, is this whole discussion over here? Where is this cut? Was it below, meaning what we would call above the glens, or would it be above? That's a weird question. Even if you cut off the entire penis, what we call above, even if you cut off the entire penis below, in the Gemara's Lashon, below the glens or below the atara, so then, obviously, it wouldn't make any difference because, so it's got to be referring to lamala miyatora, lamala meaning towards the body, because isakadaitach lamata miyatora, if you're talking about towards the ground, away from your body, so even if it was entirely cut off, it wouldn't make any difference. Afilo nikrata gidnami. Yeah, of course. This was just a trick question. Obviously, any idiot knows that, but Ravino said this over because he wanted to see if Maremar would catch him, you know. Is Maremar on the ball, excuse the Lushan, is Maremar on the ball or not in this issue, right? So, Shabushi de Maremar, who de boy? Okay. Now, there was an actual Maisa where someone in this, in Mata Mechasya, was cut in the shape of the Marzev. So what Mar Bar Rav Ashi did was, well, what's the problem? He performed a little bit of surgery, cutting along the sides of the Marzev, which would make him look like a pencil, like a sharpened pencil more. And therefore said, okay, so now he's okay. So again, you see from over here that a surgical intervention that's going to change the issue is perfectly okay. So what we're talking about over here is, as we'll see later on, only when things actually are in that situation. And there was another case of a hoof to the Havi Bapumpadisa. Now here again, in modern terms, this would have to be talking about something that is really, it's reaching, or you're talking about into the underlying plumbing. Because in terms of the Gemara, as I said, there's this idea that there are two completely different, identifiable within the penis, different tubes through which urine runs or semen runs, which doesn't have any relationship to reality. So, ahu uvta dahavi bepumpadisa, where istatim gufta de shichvat zera. So we had the lumen, which is essential for semen, got clogged up in such a way that afik b'mokum k'tanim, so that when he ejaculated, it went through the place that was meant for urine. So as, again, this is possible. I mean, you know, if you're talking about, you're talking about some kind of busted way down around the prostate area, such a thing would be possible. You know, to call that the wrong place, even though ultimately it becomes the same place. But in any event, so whatever the Gemara means, I don't know. But Savar Rav Bibi Bar Abai Alach Shuri. Rav Bibi thought that he should be mutter. Because, I mean, what do I care where it is that the guy's ejaculating from? Is he ejaculating? Is that semen getting to where it needs to get under sufficient pressure? So what's, who cares? I don't care where it's coming from. I just mean that you need to make sure that we don't have a problem of shvicha. It's interesting that in modern Hebrew, ejaculation is called shvicha, which is really interesting because with Pashtus, you would think shvicha sort of means pouring, but it relates undoubtedly to the sugya. I mean, I didn't look it up in Ben Yehuda, like where he would get the idea of ejaculation as shvicha, but it makes perfectly good sense that he would look to this pasuk. Anyway, and he knew all the Gemaras. I mean, I have the full Ben Yehuda, the original like 20 volumes. I have it in Yerushalayim, but I can't look it up here. So anyway, so Rav Bibi Bar Abai wanted to say, okay, so what's the problem? So he should be perfectly kosher. Omer of Papi, you know, it's people like you that come from a place, meaning a family of Mimuloi. You come from the family of Eliyahu Cohen. Eliyahu Cohen, they're very messed up. They had lives that were very broken up. They didn't live a very long time because of the klala on Eli Rachman al-Litzlan. So, Amritu Mili Milyatos, you say all kinds of busted up things. You know what you're talking about. So you're saying that all things depend on such gross issues as to whether you've got enough of a pressure in ejaculation. Well, you think that that's the only issue is like pressure gauges. The point is that bimekoma mivashla. Now, this makes it very, again, Rav Moshe actually took all of these issues into account in terms of medical reality. So the mashma'ut of the Gemara is that we really are talking about a wound that is close enough to affect the actual creation of viable sperm. And that would mean that it really is not talking about penis qua penis, but it's talking about the actual area in which it's going to be mevushal. So bimekoma mevashla, the sperm can mature, but only if it is going to have all of its correct relationships in the biology. But if not, shelo bimekoma lo mevashla, you may not see the difference. You know, that's because you haven't developed microscopes yet. But Lamaisa, it's not going to be Mevashla. It's not mature sperm. And immature sperm are going to leave the guy impotent. Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, you should know, if there's a hole that was closed afterwards, so then the question is like this. If that hole could stand up to the pressure of ejaculation, so then fine, so then it's good. But if it can't, and when the guy ejaculates, the pressure is going to tear open whatever membrane grew over the damage. So if he ejaculates, he tears through it, it's going to remain pasul. But otherwise, it's kosher, because again, the issue is over here, what's the reality? Have be rova, well, where is it? I mean, if you're talking about below the atara, again, meaning towards the ground. I mean, we said before, even if you would cut through the entire penis over there, it wouldn't matter. So what we've got to be talking about over here, therefore, is where we have this problem, the atara atzma. So there, if it would be, what we're saying over here is if it would be that point where even if it were actually cut through, this is because of the shape of the atara, you wouldn't have ruba shel atara intact. That's what it's referring to. Itmar nami, omar mori barmar, omar marukva, bashmuel, nikev atara atzma venistam. So if it's in that area and it got sealed, so if it would be ripped open by the pressure of ejaculation, koshili nikra v'nikra would be pasul. But if not, it would be kosher. Fine. Now we'll see that this is another one of the things that we actually refer back to in Hilchos Treifos. We refer back to this Gemara. So it's mamish. It's amazing. And of course, any of you who learned Hilchos Treifos, people will remember that all of the dinim Hilchos Treifos were related to the dinim, to all of the sugyas of Esrog, which was related to the sugya of Yosef, which is related to the sugya of penises again. So the whole thing really comes around entirely. Sholach le Rav Bered Rabbi Rav Yosef. Well, how are we supposed to get this guy to ejaculate? I mean, I thought we don't like ejaculation masturbatory situations. So in a lab, it's all very nice to say, theoretically, if he would ejaculate, but we need to be able to test this. So how are we going to test it in a way that's mutter? Or my lady says, Rabbi Yosef, look, what you do is you basically stimulate ejaculation by stimulating his prostate. So Maitina Nahama Chamima Desari, you can bring this warm bread of barley, which is a warm temperature. So you put it, stuff it up his anus till it warms the prostate, and he'll ejaculate eventually. And mikre. V'chazinanli. And then you observe and see, does it tear or does it not tear? If it doesn't tear, then it's fine. Omrabai, are you really asking how we get people to ejaculate? How do we get people not to ejaculate? It's usually the problem. I don't understand what kind of weird question this is. Otukule Alma Yaakov Avino Avoy. Everybody, they're just like, how are we going to get this immense tzaddik to ejaculate? I mean, he's like Yaakov Avino, who never was Raya Kaichi Vareshi Soini. Then over there, Shalora, carry me, Yomov, you got to worry about how to turn the guy on. I have some simple issues. You want a couple of issues of Playboy magazine? Give him Playboy magazine. What's the difference? It's not a problem to get him to ejaculate. So, oh, I'm a rabbi, whatever. So show him some pretty pictures or some pretty dresses, whatever. Get him turned on. Maverina kame big de tzivonim. Oh, my Rava. Oh, come on, man. I mean, and everybody is like Barzilai HaGiladi, like all he can think about is sex. I mean, really, you show a normal person a picture and he's going to ejaculate? That's crazy. Kulei Alma Barzilai HaGiladi. I like the first approach much better. It's hilarious. Ela Machvarta Kedushalina Mikor. The first approach is to stimulate him with some hot bread. But this, by the way, I mean, it sounds very funny, but Lemaisa, this ought to be a different issue, which is the question of whether, so this is a pillar, the idea of being meharher. So what we're trying to, we're telling him, get in Playboy magazine. I mean, I thought you're not, isn't there an iser of hirhur bichlal? Is it really true, no, to take literally, shelo yaharher b'yom v'yavoli deituma b'layla, right? That becomes our mocker in the mikol davara. So in which case, obviously, if we're trying to get you to ejaculate, so do whatever the heck you want in order to ejaculate, right? Or is there a moral issue about here or bichlal? So over here to say that I have no, there's no problem of fantasizing if there's no iser in the fantasizing causing an avera of any kind, because I'm trying to ejaculate. So then that would mean it's an entirely different approach, right? And the truth is that when it comes to fantasizing on the part of women, there really is no isser of fantasizing. So all of these halachas about not reading dirty novels or not going to a dirty movie and things like that. So do not apply to a woman because there's no way to be lovely deituma balayla. So that's what the Gemara is mashma over here. If you're in a position with that, that is not a problem. So then there is no isser of hirur. Because otherwise the Gemara is outrageous. What do you mean? Give him Playboy magazine if there's ways to get some sperm out of him without his going to being mezalzel in himself. Quite amazing. Okay. Anyway, this is, all right. Listen, let me just read that. Once we already talked about the Gemara Chulin, let me just point out to you that this Brisa, we'll read the next lines. Tana Rabbanan, Nikev Paso, Bipneshu Shotet. So if there is a hole through the penis, then it's got a problem because then he's not able to be yorech hachet. So he's going to drip semen, and dripping semen is not good enough for reproduction. We said, called Zarashenu, yorech hachet, zeno mazria. On the other hand, if it's nistam, then it becomes kosher, because at that point it works. That's all that we care about. Does it work or not? Mipnei shu molid. Vizehu, and this comes straight out of the Gemara Chulin. Vizehu psul shechoser lehechshiro. This is considered to be a psul that turns out to be kosher if it's fixed. What do you mean, zehu? And not what? This, yes. Not to include the classic example of Trefus that relates again to all of these sugyas, which is Lemu'ute Krum, Sha'ala Machmas Makabere'a, the Eno Krum. This, of course, is the biggest problem that we have in Kashrus. So that the Krum, Sha'ala Machmas Re'a, a Maka in the Re'a, is, of course, adhesions, right? So very often, so we have the source of an adhesion, is that there was a little bit of a hole. The lung drips material from there in any organ, really. But here we're talking about where anybody who does surgery knows about the disaster, what happens because of adhesion. So while whatever surgical procedure you did is healing, you end up because of it with all kinds of crazy connections where they're not supposed to be because of dripping that was taking place. And that hardens. And then to do a second surgery on the same area is a disaster. So the question over here is, so if the lung creates these adhesions, so then it's not going to be sotem. Okay, over there, of course, it gets into the problem, and that is that the lung will constantly be inflating and deflating, and that is going to be causing these adhesions to loosen. But okay, but all of that, the Gemara talks about all of those issues over there. So this is talking about the type of seal, which is a good seal, as opposed to a type of seal, which is not a good seal. So a seal on a penis is good. As long as it can survive ejaculation, it's good. We don't think that it's going to ultimately get peeled away. Masha Enke, a seal on a lung that is due to the same kind of situation, is not going to be reliable. And because of that, it's our big problem with kashrus. This is the halak meat, theoretically, is halak without these adhesions. Of course, the Ashkenazim have screwed things up royally because they never had halak meat, and they didn't have what to do with meat that wasn't kosher. People weren't exactly interested in the Nazis and helping them out throughout the ages. So they had to come up with a lot of kulas about which type of adhesions. Is it okay? You know, you can rub them, see if they come off. That creates unbelievable problems in kashrus. But anyway, this is all, remarkably, from this one statement. All of our kashrus problems today, and I should say all, but the majority of kashrus problems that we have today, halacha l'maaseh, is because of this one line.